Okay, yeah, Metzos Hashem, we're going to continue in Maharal's Ner Mitzvah. You just wanted to clarify that? Does anyone want to recap, or should we just...
We had 2 minutes okay. Instead of just waiting. Okay. My notes are a huge share, but if you say that related,
we're kind of moving on to the next stage. In a general way, we remember what we've been discussing, and that is Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar both had this vision of the Arba Malchias. The Arba Malchias, as we've been discussing, represents the Gashmias of Olam Hazeh. Departure from the Nekudah Hashem Echad. Yisrael are the representation, the reflection, the radiation of Hashem Echad. The essence of existence is that tension. The essence of Olam Hazeh is that tension between the Hashem Echad and the struggle against it, the attempt to get away from it and to suppress it, to the struggle against Hashem Echad. Okay. And therefore, as we discussed, when Daniel saw these four Malchias, he saw them in the form of beasts, relative to the Nishmas Yisrael as the true Adam. When Nebuchadnezzar saw, he saw it in the form of man, because it actually is. Adam is not a behemoth. Just when we're talking relative from the viewpoint of a Nishmas Yisrael, who is Adam, for him, he's looking so far that the difference between Nir and a behemah is nil. But when you're standing in a place where a regular Adam is, the difference between there and the behemah is immense, right? If you are a million miles away from something, you're pretty far. But if you are 50 billion miles away from that thing that's a million miles away, then it's pretty close, right? Okay.
I'm not sure if I see that. It's relative to the other thing, it's very close. But if I can use an analogy, if someone says, in order to purchase, we'd be interested in buying an airplane. So it doesn't really matter to you whether it costs $5 million or $100 million. Like you're not thinking like neither of those are in your. Maybe for you it is. I don't know. For me, neither of those are in my hasaga right now. Consider whether someone's has a deal instead of costing
What are you saying?
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. Well, it's not 2 billion away. It's only 5 million. Like
no, what I mean to say is like this: Adam, you have behema, right, which is something just a physical creature, right, and then you have something that has a nefesh, which makes it immensely greater than a behema, right. It's also physical, but it has a nefesh. And then he moved from there. He has a tura, so it has a tzelem elikim. But then he moved from there to the tzelem elikim of Yisrael is something so much further that when you look back at the first level of it, we'll call it plain Adam, which, kind of like in some ways we call it Adam, because we say it's not the true Adam. It looks much closer to behemoth because we're talking about a gradient from something that's completely physical to something that is a soul, right? And this is much, much, much closer to simply the level of the behemoth. Like, if you want a different, if you get a very crass, mundane
my analogy, that would be a good analogy. If you were talking about the billionaire, in his mind, the guy who earned $100,000 a year, or the guy who earns $1 million a year, either way, both of him are out of my league if he's a billionaire.
Exactly. Okay. That's right. Okay.
But he's a statue. It's also power.
Oh, okay. So here we're really getting on to the next step. I'll just say this out briefly because this is still part of that first phase and I want to move on to the second phase. But I'll just tuck around it out. And that's how the Maharal kind of ties up this last point by contrasting that. Daniel ultimately saw a man when he was seeing Melech HaMashiach, when he was seeing the final Malach. So when he was seeing Yisrael, he saw a man. But the difference was that he saw man. How did he see him? He saw these four fearsome beasts, right? And then he saw man. He didn't see like a human being. I mean, he didn't see it with flesh and blood. He saw a man kind of among the clouds, a spiritual being up there among the clouds, right? When Nebuchadnezzar saw man, meaning neither of them saw what me and you look like. Neither of them saw what me and you look like. Daniel saw a spiritual being, the form of man. Nebuchadnezzar saw a statue made of different metals and things, right? So the Maharal says that this is also part of the point. Again, Daniel was seeing the characterization of the Yisrael. The Yisrael is much more ruach than guf. Even when we're talking about this is an Adam and that is an Adam, okay? The Yisrael is an neshama, right? And is a guf kind of artificially tacked on, slipping along for 120 years, right? But when he's seeing Adam in a more like inherent way, he saw something very, very spiritual. And we discussed this plenty. We aren't neshamas, we aren't goofs. Whereas when Nebuchadnezzar saw, so here again, he was seeing the more, the essence of it, there he was seeing primarily Chaimer, primarily the physicality, because there, the main, the dominant characteristic is the Chaimer, and therefore he saw it Pashat as Chaimer without any Ruach to it, because he was seeing it in its more essential form, and he was seeing it in its more essential form. So neither of them exactly saw the bus of Adam that we're accustomed to. And this is also, again, bringing out the completely different places that the two are. Okay. Now, we move on to the next stage of the discussion. This is really what we'll be seeing tonight, as a session. Sorry. Okay. In case you're trying to follow, Kibavadai Mashor David Malchis, you might see a sentence, a paragraph that begins Va'af Kinira Bo.
Kibavadai
Mashor.
That's what I have.
Oh, very good. Okay. If you want me to find it.
The same page.
No, it's not. It's a different. It's a different publication.
Okay. Oh, to the beginning, right?
What's that? Yeah. In Vaday Mashero Adal Malchias, when Nebuchadnezzar saw these Dalim Malchias, Bitzelem Adam, in the form of a man. Sorry. Oh, 1 minute.
I'll skim through it.
It's on this page.
Yeah. Oh, I'll skim quickly.
Okay. There are four main koiches in a person, meaning man is comprised of, we'll call it, four elements. Okay. One is simply the physical, okay, your body. And then there's the nefesh, we'll call that your ego, your feelings, etc. Okay. The koyach ze afkiu gam king. Okay, skipping a couple of lines. Hashlishi usichli. And then the third aspect of man is his seichel, his intellect. Okay. Now, the Avki near a bow. I keep on skipping a few lines. You're okay with that? Jumping a few lines each time. So we have, he said there are four parts to man. Right now he only listed three. The body, you have what we're calling the feelings, and then we're having the seichel. Okay, he calls this gufni, nafshi, and sikhli. Even though the sikhli is really the greatest part of man, right? However, it's certainly not the most dominant feature of man. It might be the most important, but it's far from being the most dominant, right?
Lefikach, Sider Elo HaMalchias, and therefore the order in which these Malchias were seen was not in that order. Kikach HaNafshu Poel Yoyser Kasher Yadua. Really, the dominant force of a regular person, regular material person, is the feeling part, the ego part, etc. And then you have just the body itself. And the seicheldika part, even though, as we said, it's the greatest part of man, that's not really what's ruling. It's kind of nidchak to the side. And therefore, he says, the real memshala, the real malchus, is shaykh to the nafshi part. The ego, the feelings, that's really what dominates a person on a regular basis. And therefore, he says, you know what? I'm going to move through it right now, Baal Peh, until we get to the next part that I'm going to see inside. The first one was Bavel. What was Bavel? Bavel was about ego. Nebuchadnezzar was about ego. He wanted to reign supreme. And therefore, he's first. And he's a Nesher. He's the, well, commonly translated as eagle, but probably really a condor who soars. What's the vulture that soars high? What's that?
Ayit.
So I think Ayit is eagle. Nesher is really a vulture. I think. That soars highest from all the birds. And because this was about the, Nebuchadnezzar wanted to reign supreme. That was his agenda. He didn't need other people to be mekabel his beliefs. And he didn't care even so much about davka, you know, their spoils. He wanted to rule the world. And this was koyach nafshi, was about ego. He's number one. He epitomizes memshala when we're talking in terms of guf, because that's really the most dominant force in man. Therefore, he's number one, and he is the nesher that flies high. That's the nafshi, that's right. Number two is paras. This is the doiv. What's the doiv? Exactly. A lot of stomach and some paws and teeth to help the stomach, right? And it's like the Gemara in Megillah says that were they like a doiv. Why? That they eat and drink like bears. They are clumsy like bears, like big, bulky people. They're very hairy like bears. They're restless like bears. Okay. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Okay, good. So there you go.
I read once that the bear doesn't even know what it's eating, whether it's a prey or not.
Whether it's food.
Is.
Whether it's a vegetable or a, it just eats.
If you run away from it, conclusion, it must be my food.
Must be food. Chases, I hear.
But if it played dead, then. You yell at it, then you're not the food.
There you go. It's just identifying food. This was paras. And, you know, if you want to understand why they're characterized this way, see Esther, right? See the Megillah, and you get it, right? Okay. And then, so therefore, he goes on, he just gives a few examples. This is not really our subject right now, but that's why Hamanu, that the way to Ahasuerus's heart was money, wine, right? That's what it was about. Money is included in this because it's just about, you know, getting, right? It's not ego. Money is not an ego thing. So I want more money, you know, okay? Then the next one, and this is really where we're going to be putting our attention now, is the Nomer, which is known for its Azus, right? And this, of course, is Yavan. And you already know what we're up to in our list. This is the Koyach HaSichli. Okay? The Seichel. HaMalchus She'achrov, again, I'm skipping a little bit. HaMalchus She'achrov Ro Yisrael Daniel Kenomer. The next Malchus Daniel saw as a Nomer. Again, I'm just calling it a Nomer because every translation you look, you'll see leopard, tiger, panther, whatever. Nomer, okay? Big cat. This is, what's that?
Or a cat.
Okay.
The cats.
So
if they never could speak.
So the big cats. right? The big cats, what they call lions and tigers. Even the big cats.
Even the Beit Shemesh cats have that tiger
act.
It's my house.
So
you happen to live here.
So Seichel. The third element that we're talking about is the Seichel. Shamalchus hazeh hayo baya chachma vehatvuna. Because this Malchus, Yavon, is characterized by their chachma. Kemoshi is barzeh barichus, as we will be discussing at length. The essence of this Malchus was Bikush HaChachma, maximizing human ability with the understanding that the greatest faculty of human ability, really want to make the most out of what Adam is in its Seichel. And that the Seichel can reach very, very great heights, a lot more than we might realize. Which we know about the Yavanim. Therefore, more than these other two Malchias, Yavon had an agenda against the Torah. Babel didn't. Paras didn't interest them. They were self-centered. Right? They didn't care what you did, as long as you were either subject to them or as long as you were giving the money and the right. But Yavon had an agenda against the Torah. Why? Levateloisam Yisrael. They wanted to be mevatel Torah from Israel. Why? These people worshipped human intellect. They worshipped human intellect. They saw that as the greatest entity that could possibly exist in our world, because they had a true appreciation of Chachma. They had a true appreciation of Chachma, right? The Rambam says that Aristotle was Karev Lamalas and Vua. The Koyach HaMachshava is a very, very powerful tool, and man is immensely deep. And therefore, they saw in this the peak of human achievement. Now,
why would aesthetics be so important?
Right. Also,
what's that?
Aesthetics.
Yeah,
the whole body, the groove, aesthetics, beauty, why is that?
Where does all that fit into the picture? Where does all that fit into the picture? Yes. I don't know.
Also, maybe these are the gods. For this god, for everything. If it's a chokhmah, they're supposed to worship the human, not the.
Okay. The truth that we can deal with. The gods, if you look in the Khazari, you see the philosopher's approach for that. It's one big lav davka, meaning gods are there to provide a certain need. It doesn't have to be this god per se. You need gods for various functions. You can make them up. As far as the philosopher is concerned, that's fine. God, religion, is a means to certain aspects of developing your faculties. You can call it this, you can call it that, it doesn't really matter. As far as he's concerned, you want to be a Christian, be a Christian. You want to be a Muslim. Apply yourself with the right philosophical approach and you'll reach where you need to get. So we don't have to be too bothered by the gods. Now, the lower levels of the Greeks, they probably believed in them like any other pagan did. But the top echelons, the philosophers, for them, the gods were a certain utility and it was a big lav davka. They didn't have their reverence, the religious reverence for the gods themselves as much as it's another hechetimtza in their quest for bringing out their own, you know, maximizing their own potential. The body piece and the beauty piece, I don't know. Is that a separate dimension of Yavan? Is it connect somehow? I don't know. Leaving that open for discussion. But that we do know, that Yavan, right, philosophy, it's interesting. It was mamish that kufa, because Ari makes that point, right, when they're discussing. You know, we have Chachma, they have Chachma. We said ours. So they don't have Chachma Mikubelis. They had humans who reached very, very great levels of Chachma. They didn't claim that it was Mikubel from anywhere. And it was a very, very short window of time. The whole business of Greek philosophy, as famous as it was and as great as it was in that period, a couple of generations, that was it. Nothing before, nothing afterwards. Right? It wasn't like there's an Ummah whose history is Chachma. But at that point in time, yes, they were that. Alexander was a Talmud of Aristotle, and he was, I'm not sure what he would describe now. He was so enthralled with it, so enamored with it,
that he was just plotting to have the whole world adopted. And we're going to see a little bit more soon about the depths behind that. Why philosophy more than, let's say, a religion? He's going to say that, no, it's an inherent part of human nature, that if you excel in philosophy, you want to see others adopting it. We'll see. But therefore, the Greeks had a very big problem with the Torah, because the Jews are coming and saying that human chachma, as great as it is, we have something that simply, there's a ceiling to human chachma, there's a ceiling to it, and we have something that hovers above that. We have something eloki. And this drove them nuts, because this was a major slap in the face to the otzma, to the immensity of what they were discovering, of what they were, you have to appreciate what philosophy is. You have to appreciate what chachma really is. Ludwig de Miller used to speak about how we don't really appreciate the depths of our own koyach hamachshava. Because we, in general, maybe you have, but like Western culture is much more about absorbing information than sustained thought processes. Like meditation, in the intellectual sense, is not an exercise that's really developed as a proper science where we come from. And the truth is that to a large extent, that's just how we approach Torah. But the concept of just sitting, for example, just to give a very mundane example of this. One of the Chachmei HaGoyim said that it's a very rare problem that can sustain, that can withstand a sustained assault of thought. When we have a problem, we're trying to find a solution, we don't spend a lot of time just sitting down and thinking, what can a solution be? When we spend a lot of time thinking about a problem, often, if you notice, the thought process is, I have a big problem, what can I do about it? Something doesn't hit me immediately, and therefore, the continuation of the thought process is what a big problem it is. Think about that in practical terms, unless you've actually taken active steps to move beyond that. Generally, when a person is sitting and thinking about, what can I do about this problem? There isn't a straight 3 minutes of thought of what can a solution be. It's, what can I do about it? Nothing hits me immediately. This is a real problem, and that's where my mental energies continue to flow into what a problem is. Following what I'm saying? With me on this? Now, this, I forgot who it was. I wouldn't quote him in Spanish anyways, but one of the Chachmei HaGoyim came and said that was his line. It's a very rare problem that can withstand the assault of sustained thought. Meaning, if you're going to take just thinking now, what can be a solution? Remain focused on that and really attack the problem with it. You would be surprised, you might be surprised, at things you will come up with. Now, Ludwig de Miller would very much encourage taking this. That's just a very, very pragmatic example. But taking, let's say, a Mamar Chazal that you've always known, you appreciate its value. And now just taking it and meditating on it for 5 minutes straight, you might find yourself suddenly appreciating it to a much deeper level. Or so you decide that you're going to simply think about the parasha, story of the parasha. But for longer than you usually granted it. And he's basically telling you, and so this works, and I tried it too. You will come up with problems that you never thought of before. And if you continue to think, you will be surprised by the solutions, by the insights that you'll come up with. Whether it's a parsha, whether it's a pasuk, whether it's a mamar chazal, etc. You take it and apply what this guy called a sustained assault of thought, you'll be surprised at your own depth. You'll be surprised at the depth that's inside you. Now, the philosophers turned this into a real science. They had sciences for sustained meditation, thinking into various truths or theories, and they reached immense depth. Not only that, but Khuzari says how their bikush ha'emes was such that these people had whole systems for avodas amidus. Why? Because they understood that anything from taiva to a life of material involvement can get in the way, can cloud my sense of emes. And they wanted to move that out of the way so that their thought should be unfettered, right? And therefore, that whole Torah's probably this. I mean, this before I always had a problem with that famous story about Aristotle. Right? You know the famous story that they told about Aristotle?
Aristotle in his classroom. Aristotle.
Yeah, I had a problem with that because it does not stem with the things that I knew about him in a sense. It's a steer to the whole concept. Meaning, there's that famous story that they tell that he was once caught doing something very immoral. This was the man who had taught morals, right? So he said something to the effect of, if a person teaches trigonometry, does that mean that he has to be a triangle? Right now, I'm not Aristotle.
Okay, I'm Aristotle, but I'm teaching.
But that would imply...
Traditionally, the Rebbe would then say, well, you're Ventura, it's not just in the base matter, it's on the basketball, but you're also Ventura.
That's right.
That's what the Rosh Hashanah is.
Now, this would imply that we're talking about a genius who had his intellectual activities and he had his other parts of life. But that's really a steer to the whole concept of what it was. What's that? That's right. It is. And therefore, I was very validated to discover that it wasn't him. It was somebody from about 150 years ago in some English university. In some English university, I asked one of these people, what's that? Oh, there we go. What's that?
That was his line.
Well, there is some story about Aristotle, whether it's true or not. What you're saying, I remember back then saying there were
so again,
I heard the Mr.
Rabbi Miller said that. Yeah. I heard it from Rabbi Miller.
What, about Aristotle?
No, but this fellow, the professor who is with his wives of his students.
Oh, okay. So not Aristotle. Oh, okay.
No, we said Aristotle. I remember hearing my quote says Parsha Bilam, Parsha Balak, about Bilam's, that how did Bilam do what he did? Because Bilam could be like that, but when he's not doing what he's doing, then he could be like that. So then he said, but we're not like that. You're a Batura on the basketball court. You're a basketball when you're going on your teal is in camp. You're going on your trip. You're always a Batura. So you're contrasting what a Batura is versus Aristotle or Bilam.
So Lamaisa has to be refined a little more because I'm coming off the Khuzari. The Khuzari is very, very profound on this, and he says that no, these people rejected all involvement in anything material. They made big exercises of precious. They detached themselves from money because they did not want their bikush of their machshava to be clouded or fettered in any way. So that's why my personal preference is to reject these stories about those people, meaning about that kufa of philosophers who went down also as far as we're concerned as the epitome of Chochma Bagoyim. The epitome of Chochma Bagoyim includes moving these things out of your way in order to be able to get them. But the point that I'm trying to make is to appreciate why these people appreciated the power of Seichel, and they brought it to immensely high levels. And therefore, they were extremely proud of, say, Lahavdil. Somebody once asked, I think it was what they call, maybe the Rashab, one of the middle of Bavitcher Rebbes. The Rayat said this over, so it had to be before him. Asked, I don't know if it was the Tzemach Tzedek or the Rashab, I don't know, whatever it is, they said, why isn't Lubavitch into Moifis stories? They weren't into that, Moifis stories. So the answer was, and this is very profound, the answer was, by us, the biggest Moifis is that you can take a chunk of flesh and turn it into another. Right? That's the biggest moifus. So there's a lot to that. There's tons to that. That deserves a lot of elaboration, right? But this is actually what their pride was. We can make out of man something immensely greater, right, than you would think man is. By taking that seichel ad hasof. And therefore, they were extremely proud of this. This was a major besirut to mankind. Look what a man is.
This is so sad. There are Greek orgies and gymnasium.
I don't know, right? I don't know.
It's what Greek, you know, this culture is all about.
If we just want to go out there, take it simple, I guess we have to say that yes, there were a few different layers. Right? I doubt that Aristotle was in the gymnasium. That's right. Oh, I'm not accusing the Greek nation as a whole of very pristine moral standards, right? But I'm saying that this layer of it, that is probably true. Meaning it was more than taiva.
That's not taiva for the purest
right. Form of it. That's right. So whatever the case is, even setting that aside, the Greeks, they have a track record. We do know that they were sunken in their times. But again, you know, I don't want to get caught up on this too much. So we do know that there was that philosophic element there. And there, that the great philosophers were not a part of that also. It's just the mathematics, right?
So they wouldn't have, they themselves wouldn't have spread Hellenism. The philosophers, they wouldn't care. It's just their generals.
Oh, no. So here we're getting to the point. They care very much. Here's really where we're getting to the point.
It's just an means to an end.
What's that?
It's just means to an end.
What?
Hellenism.
Well, what is Hellenism per se? I have to know, what exactly are we denoting when we use the word? Greek culture as a whole? Oh, okay. So yes, we have to understand that on the contrary, the agenda of spreading it was primarily there. It was primarily their adarab, the chevra who were just involved in partying. What do they care if you don't party? Why should you be kanoish about somebody else partying? These people had what to be kanoish about. And this is where the Maharal is in. These people had what to be kanoish about. These people had what to be offended about. All I want is to satisfy every last lust in my body. I don't have to care about the fact that you look down on me. It's not a steer to what I want to do. I can still satisfy every last lust in my body, right? With you looking down on me. Not a steer to what I want. I have my mind a little bit. If I'm an egoistic guy, it might bother me. But it's not a steer to what I'm doing, right? Not a steer to what I'm doing. But for these people, it was. And this is where the primary attack on Teras Yisrael came from. So let's see. Why? Because once again, these people were saying their essence was, we've reached the highest places that a human could reach, right? And to come and say, we're hovering above that, it was a steer to everything they were. It was a steer to all their achievement. This is what made them nuts, right? They came and when a person, self-realization is something that a person feels much more passionate about than a person has taivas. Okay, fine. Once his taivas fulfilled here, he can be distracted from them. He can be pretty passionate about taivas, no question about that, right? But self-realization is something that is so an inherent part of who the person is, right, that he's immensely passionate about it and defensive of it, right? So to these people, their own achievement here was something of such paramount value that, yes, they wanted it recognized. They wanted it they wanted it spread. They believed in it. It wasn't just that they wanted it for themselves. They believed in it. They were enamored with it, right? And therefore, yes, they wanted all the other nations to be buying into this. And when they hit a pocket of people who said, turned up their nose and said, we don't need this. We have something better. They couldn't stomach that. And that's where the main tension between, sure, you had the level that they wanted to conquer. Say that, do your own life, live your backward life, and we'll be in charge. Like Nebuchadnezzar, right? But where did the tension between the culture and Torah Yisrael come? It came dafka from here.
So they didn't really care about the Davar Acher and the Mizbeach. Right? They went to Iraq, they wouldn't do that. They wanted the Jews.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Seriously, it's just for the Jews.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, they tried to impose it everywhere. Alexander was an evangelist. They tried to impose it everywhere. Most of the nations of the world were all too eager to move on. This was the new era of mankind, right? Mankind was moving into a whole new phase, a whole new enlightened phase. And all the, like Josephus says, that they had no problem switching their old faiths with new, advanced, brilliant ones. But here, the Greeks ran into something that was a slap in the face. And that was coming up against the nation that just turns up their nose and says, Shkoyach. So you're like, you pushed yourself really hard, right? You made these immense achievements and you got to here. We're over here. You can't get any higher. That they couldn't handle. And this they had, that, and therefore, we're coming back to the point and saying, since Yavan is the Seichel de Kapart, is the number. The number is the Az. What's the, so here it means passionate. Kanoi, right? Just going to push it all the way, right? Tenacious. That's what they are characterized by.
That's why you need the Kohanim from Levi, Az versus Az.
Oh, I hear. I thought you were going, the Maral is going to go in that direction. Just he's going to fork somewhere else. But yeah, it had to be Levi, as we'll see. You know, we're going to end with this tonight. We're going to get to that next week. I'll just throw out where the Maral is going to take this. Is that Yavon? You have Kohen. Is 75, Yavon is 76, right? In that sense, the gematria of Yavon is actually above Kayin. Above Kayin, right? Then it says Heicha is how much? 65. One minute. That's it? Heicha is 65. Good. So you know what? I'm gonna let Maral do this when he gets to it. but okay. But fine. We've introduced the tension. We've introduced the tension, and we understand why Yavon are that as the tenacious, bold, unrelenting Namer versus Nebuchadnezzar was about ego. He wanted to be highest, flying high like the Mesher. The Persians, who wanted to eat? Feed us and we're happy, right? And then you have the Az, the bold fighter that's Yavon. Okay, continue this next week.
Thank you.
Come to you.
Anyway.